Our first case for argument this morning is AT&T Broadband against the electrical workers. Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. AT&T Corp. and the IBEW have a collective bargaining agreement that contains a neutrality and union organizing provision. That provision regulates union organizing activity. There are dispute resolution procedures under that agreement whereby the parties refer to arbitration, in their parlance, a third-party neutral, disputes concerning union organizing matters. The NCE, the neutrality agreement, further provides that where there's a dispute over bargaining, the parties are to go to mediation. On March 4 of this year, the unions notified AT&T Broadband that they wished to proceed to an arbitrator with respect to issues that came up during collective bargaining for represented employees as opposed to non-represented employees. After discussions about that matter, the parties reached an impasse, and the unions referred the matter to the third-party neutral, Gene Bonhoff, who was the one assigned in this case. In that, before the lawsuit was filed, the union submitted a statement of position to arbitrator Bonhoff, contending that bargaining disputes are arbitrable under the party's NCE agreement. We, of course, disagreed. We filed a lawsuit, and we sought an injunction in the district court staying the arbitration and to get a determination on whether dispute was substantively arbitrable. In this case, the union's position boils down to this. A court is powerless to enjoin an arbitration proceeding that is ultra vires under the party's contract. They maintain that such agreements to dispute resolution...
Putting the Norris-LaGuardia Act to one side, why should a court ever enjoin arbitration? You have an adequate remedy at the end of the arbitration. If you lose the arbitration, you just ask the court not to enforce it or wait till the other side moves to enforce. I don't understand why, under ordinary principles of equity, arbitration should ever be enjoined.
Your Honor, I think we'd respond this way. First of all, the AT&T Technologies case says in very clear terms that a judicial determination on arbitrability has to precede arbitration.
Has to precede arbitration? It said whether something is arbitrable is a question ultimately decided normally by a judge. Does not logically have to precede the arbitration.
Your Honor, I beg to differ.
There's been breach of contract is normally decided by a judge, but that doesn't mean the judicial decision has to precede the breach.
Your Honor, all I can do is refer to the court's language in the AT&T Technologies case, which says it must precede a determination, a referral to arbitration, that a party cannot be made to arbitrate what it hasn't agreed to arbitrate, and the court must say so, decide the issue first. And to Your Honor's second point, various courts have held that a referral to arbitration is irreparable harm. It is putting the parties through something they did not agree to go through. And in this case, it illustrates the point. The union is seeking, in this case, in effect, interest arbitration. They're asking a stranger to the party's contract to decide whether Broadband's proposals are good enough, and if they're not good enough, that Broadband make more generous proposals. There's nothing in this contract that remotely gives the union any right to that type of determination. In fact, Broadband has a statutory right to negotiate with the union and to reach a deal or not to reach a deal, and if a deal is not reached, there's an impasse. In this particular case, the parties have specifically agreed in their contract that mediation would be the outcome if there was no agreement during bargaining with respect to represented units. The issue of whether a party goes to arbitration or not, we respectfully submit, is not a labor dispute within the meaning of the Norris-LaGuardia Act. We rely on the textile workers case. In fact, all the cases which the unions rely on fail to take...
See why it makes any difference whether arbitration is a labor dispute. The Norris-LaGuardia Act applies to all controversies growing out of labor disputes. This request for arbitration grows out of a labor dispute.
I guess, Your Honor, I disagree. The Supreme Court...
You don't think the arbitration grows out of a labor dispute?
In the most general ethereal sense, it does, Judge, but the Supreme Court said in textile workers that the issue of whether a party goes to arbitration or not is simply not something that was covered by the Norris LaGuardia Act. The pertinent language in the textile workers case, there's section 104, lists the matters, the labor disputes that are specifically about which a court can't give an injunction. Arbitration's not there. There's no strike in this case. There's no work stoppage. There's nothing of the type the Norris LaGuardia Act was intended to prohibit. And I guess the difficulty with the language that Your Honor points out on the meaning of
but
labor...
The Norris LaGuardia Act doesn't say no court shall enjoin a strike. It says no court shall issue an injunction in a case involving or growing out of a labor dispute.
Your Honor, we recognize that, and I guess, again, all I can do is come back to the textile workers case so far as the Supreme Court...
In other words, you're just asking us to ignore the text and do something else instead. That's not a very popular position in the Supreme Court these days.
Actually, Judge, what we're asking is to follow the textile workers case in terms of the definition of a labor dispute. But we go one step further. Regardless of whether it's a Norris LaGuardia Act labor dispute or not, we submit it isn't. The NLA has to bend to 301 in this case. The Supreme Court cases are replete with examples that where the LMRA 301 authorizes an injunction that a party is entitled to an injunction. Of course, the classic case is Boys Markets, where there was a strike, an indisputably protected activity under the NLRA, or excuse me, under the NLA, but nonetheless enjoinable under Section 301. In this case, we obviously take the position that it's not a labor dispute, but even if it were, the NLA is trumped by the party's contract and the dispute resolution procedure that the parties have specifically negotiated. Section 173D.
Are you able to distinguish every case that ruled against you on this?
I think we can, Your Honor. The first one, which is kind of it's the D.C. Circuit case, the granddaddy of all these other decisions. Really, that case is a very muddled decision and really doesn't even address this situation. In that case, the parties agreed the dispute was arbitrable under the contract. There wasn't even a dispute about whether it was arbitrable. Second, that case was decided pre-AT&T Technologies with its statement that said a judicial determination has to precede a compulsory submission to arbitration. The whole dispute in that case just simply went off on the employer was arguing that they were going to be inconvenienced by going to arbitration and so on, and the court in that case didn't go along with it. But the fact of the matter is that case involved a dispute which was concededly arbitrable. So it's not that case isn't really very authoritative on that. The other cases are in the same vein. They don't follow the textile workers' provisions that this is not a NLA dispute, and furthermore, they don't go along with the Trump argument that we've been advocating, which is that AT&T technology.
My colleague's question was whether you could distinguish them. What you're now doing is saying they're wrong because they don't follow your view of textile workers. And of course, you're certainly entitled to say that, but I don't see how that's a distinction of the cases.
I think we're saying both. I'm distinguishing the D.C. Circuit case on the basis that it didn't even present the issue that's before this court, and to the extent that it went on to find that the matter before it was a labor dispute under the NLA, we disagree with that, and we say it's wrong.
The Ninth Circuit addressed your issue, saying that we believe the D.C. Circuit's reasoning is just as compelling when the parties are engaged in a dispute over arbitrability as when the obligation to arbitrate is clear.
Yes, they did say that. And with that statement, we simply disagree, and we say it's wrong. This court, in a case decided in the 70s, the Pabst case, applied a rule that we think also applied. In the Pabst case, this court said that the provisions of Section 301 are to be applied despite the Norris LaGuardia Act. If 301 affords the parties, meaning broadband here...
Well, tell you what, I just downloaded the AT&T Technologies case and looked through it, used my little find function. The word precede does not appear in that opinion anywhere.
Your Honor, when I sit down, I'll come back and I will give you that citation.
Okay.
Finally, we'd submit the union is really on the wrong side of the issue in this case. The union wants arbitration agreements enforced. It would discourage employers to agree to arbitration agreements if they were unlimited and if anything got swept into it. In this case, we believe the contract is very clear that the dispute resolution procedures they've invoked apply to non-represented employees, not to bargaining conduct issues. And by stretching to include, to sweep in, bargaining conduct issues, the union is creating disincentives for the employer community to agree to arbitration agreements. I'll reserve the rest of my time, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Newman.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, my name is John Newman. I'm here on behalf of the IBEW and IBEW Local 21. I just want to address a few points raised by Mr. Jackson in his argument, the first of which is the notion that Section 301 of the LMRA somehow trumps, in all cases, the plain language of the Norris LaGuardia Act. The Supreme Court addressed that very issue in its Buffalo Forge decision, in which case the Supreme Court refused to enjoin a labor dispute precisely because the underlying dispute was not arbitrable, and in doing so pointed out on page 409 of that decision that when it enacted the LMRA, Congress specifically rejected a provision that would have essentially adopted Mr. Jackson's argument, saying that the LMRA will trump the Norris LaGuardia Act, and in any 301 suit, injunctive relief can be awarded. The Supreme Court and other courts have recognized that in certain instances, such as this one, where the plain language of the Norris LaGuardia Act bars the issue of an injunction here, and I'll address the labor dispute question in just a moment, that nevertheless, in certain circumstances, the Norris LaGuardia Act must be accommodated to other statutes and other congressional policies, the overriding one of which is the policy favoring the arbitration rather than the litigation in federal court of labor disputes. And in this case, to argue that a federal court litigation seeking to stop the arbitration of a labor dispute somehow furthers the policy expressed by Congress of favoring the private settlement of labor disputes through arbitration, we submit is completely mistaken. On Mr. AT&T's labor dispute question, the question of whether or not this dispute arises or grows out of a labor dispute, I would just point out a point that is emphasized in our brief, and that is that the term labor dispute is defined not in Section 4 of the Act, and AT&T repeatedly emphasizes that the conduct that it seeks to enjoin here is not conduct that is set forth in Section 4. Nevertheless, Section 13, 29 U.S.C. 113, defines the term labor dispute. If labor dispute was limited to those acts set forth in Section 104, then the rest of the act is completely superfluous. Injunctions can issue in certain circumstances in labor disputes, and that is addressed in Section 7 of the Act and Section 8 of the Act and Section 9 of the Act. If labor dispute was limited to the activities set out in Section 4, you wouldn't need those other provisions, because if the conduct involves something that is set forth in Section 4 of the Act, an injunction cannot issue, period. End of story. It doesn't matter what provisions and procedures the federal court follows and what findings of fact it made and whether or not the party seeking an injunction had exhausted every method of arbitrating and resolving the underlying dispute. I'd also like to address one point that I think was raised at the outset of AT&T's argument, which goes to the irreparable harm question. I think that also, the idea that AT&T has no irreparable harm here, we are litigating the underlying dispute as we speak, in district court that there was a prayer for declaratory judgment in this case.
Well, there's one thing in AT&T Technologies that does help your adversary. At least the Supreme Court in AT&T Technologies quotes from Wiley against Livingston, which does at least suggest that the judicial decision should precede the arbitration. It may not be in AT&T Technologies, but maybe it's there in Wiley.
But the judicial, if a judicial decision to order arbitration, in that circumstance, the arbitrability question may precede the arbitration, but that's not this case. No one has sought an injunction in order requiring anyone here to arbitrate or mediate or do anything else. The union wants to arbitrate. The union is happy to mediate anything that AT&T wants to mediate. The court simply denied AT&T's request to stop the injunction. The court did not order AT&T to arbitrate. If it wants to participate in the arbitration procedures, that's its own choice. And in doing so...
What, by the way, is the status of the arbitration?
This particular case has been consolidated with some other disputes, and the case is now before a different arbitrator, Arbitrator Ben. Previously, Arbitrator Van Hoff had bifurcated the proceeding, so to speak. Had asked the parties to brief the arbitrability question, and she has issued a decision, which is in the record, I believe, at 19. It was supplemented with the record. Finding that...
I know, but I'm asking about its current status.
Yes, current
status. That was quite some time ago.
Current status, there has been no hearings on the matter.
Everybody is going to sleep, in other words.
Yes. Which is precisely what I think is a result of AT&T's attempt to have the courts intervene in this.
Why didn't you just proceed with the arbitration?
We are trying to do so. We are anxious and attempting to arbitrate as we speak. Frankly, what happened in this case... As soon as AT&T filed its lawsuit in federal court, everybody slammed on the brakes, including the arbitrator.
Well, there's a big difference between asking for an injunction and getting one. If you and the arbitrator are going to proceed as if AT&T had gotten an injunction just because they asked for one, there's scarcely any point in having judges decide these cases.
I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the fact that we want this arbitration to move and move as quickly as possible. We can only move at the speed at which the arbitrators are going to move. It has slowed down a little bit because this particular dispute and others have been consolidated in a much larger case that is going to be heard before Arbitrator Ben, who recently issued his own decision, defining the scope of those disputes. That arbitration, I believe, is scheduled to go forward on the merits next month in October. I think the parties
are changing dates. Hasn't AT&T cast this for us in their briefs is one a request to compel arbitration or mediation?
It's tried to do that, but if simply you look at our supplemental appendix and the papers that they filed in district court, nowhere did they seek a prayer compelling the union's mediation or arbitration of this dispute. We're happy to go to mediation. We're happy to go to arbitration. Those are very separate, different types of procedures. A mediator is a facilitator, someone that will try to help the parties reach a collective bargaining agreement. A mediator will not decide, like an arbitrator would in this case, whether or not AT&T violated the collective bargaining agreement. So, again, it is our position that the mediation clause in the neutrality agreement is not to the exclusion of the arbitration clause. They address they're there for two entirely different purposes, and they address two problems. We're ready to proceed on both tracks and want to do so and want to get this issue behind us as quickly and as soon as possible. I'm just want to address for a moment the four circuit decisions that we've cited and are replete throughout our briefs. In AT&T's counsel addressed the D.C. Circuit's decision in the District 1 case. That decision does address one particular argument squarely that's at the heart of AT&T's position here, and that is whether or not the underlying dispute in this case is a labor dispute. The employer in that case made the exact same argument. It argued, look, The conduct that we're seeking to enjoin is not conduct that is in Section 4 of the Norris LaGuardia Act. Therefore, it is not a labor dispute. The D.C. Circuit addressed that on its decision on rehearing, addressed that point precisely and held no. The term labor dispute is defined in Section 13. Section 1 of the Act states that no injunction shall issue in any labor dispute arising or growing out no injunction shall issue in a case arising or growing out of a labor dispute except in strict conformity with the terms of this Act, the entire Act. The other decisions, including Lucan Steel, are precisely on point. Lucan Steel is a Third Circuit decision in which case the issue was whether or not the underlying dispute was arbitrable. The facts in that case are strikingly similar to the facts in this case. Instead of proceeding with the arbitration, in that case the employer went into court and sought an injunction. The Third Circuit in that case and the First Circuit in the Tejidos case both addressed AT&T's argument that AT&T Technologies, the Supreme Court decision, controls in this case and held, as we argue, that the only thing the Supreme Court did in AT&T Technologies was to reaffirm longstanding labor principles that substantive arbitrability is a question for the arbitrator, is a question for the court and not for the arbitrator. And nowhere in that decision is A, the Norris LaGuardia Act mentioned, and B, is there any implication that employers can now open up the floodgates to federal court litigation by seeking to enjoin labor disputes every time it believes that the underlying disputes are not arbitrable. If the court has no further questions, I will close at this point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Newman.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Jackson?
In the AT&T Technologies case, the court, in fact, is quoting John Wiley. And
right. And I've now read John Wiley, too. It's wonderful having this online with hyperlinks and all of that. Both AT&T Technologies and Wiley v. Livingston arose out of lawsuits to compel arbitration. Neither one of them was a lawsuit to enjoin arbitration. So, of course, in both cases, the decision about arbitrability would precede the arbitration. That was the nature of the lawsuit. I can't find any suggestion in either one of them that there could be a motion to enjoin an arbitration.
We're not suggesting there was, Your Honor. What we're saying, though, is under 301, we can't be compelled to go to arbitration if we didn't agree to it.
You're not being compelled to go to arbitration. This arbitration apparently will go on whether AT&T participates or not.
Actually not. Not on the issue that's before the court. It's not in the record, but I'm sure I'll be corrected. But the arbitrator who has the case now is waiting for the court's decision. On the issue that's before Your Honors, the arbitrator is waiting for the court's decision.
That's a different question. You may have an arbitrator who's timid or unwilling to go forward, but if I understand the underlying contractual relation, AT&T can't block the arbitration just by sitting on its duff.
We're not, Judge. We're telling the union that they are not entitled to arbitration under this contract. That's what we're saying. We're not sitting on our duff. We're saying they're trying to arbitrate things.
Walking on your duff.
Well, actually, we filed a motion, Judge, and that's why we sought a preliminary injunction in the district court. And the district court's opinion on this point is precisely the opposite of the quoted language from the Supreme Court's decision that a compulsory submission to arbitration cannot precede judicial determination. The district court, in its decision, said that we are, in fact, entitled to a judicial determination, but the determination need not precede arbitration. It's precisely the opposite of the rule we're relying on, and we recognize, as Your Honor points out, that was not an injunction action. The employer was seeking to limit arbitration. With respect to the labor point and the NLA point that the counsel points out, the language of the controlling Supreme Court decision, again, is the textile workers case. And the court said, in answer to Judge Easterbrook, your questions about the literal language of the statute, the court said, though a literal reading might bring the dispute within the terms of the Act, we see no justification in policy for restricting 301 to damage suits, leaving specific performance of a contract to arbitrate disputes to the detriment of a suit to require arbitration. We're saying in this case, because 173D does not leave it to the parties to establish what exactly their extra contractual remedies and forms will be. And the policy of all the Supreme Court decisions on this is arbitration is not by itself the issue. It's enforcement of private dispute resolution procedures. For all these reasons, we'd request that the court reverse and the court send the case back down to the district court for a determination on a hearing on our motion for a preliminary injunction.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. The case is taken under advisement.